Hold it. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
Four championships in the last 5 years. Yeah, I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days, podcast number 26, Marcus Boucher, Harney Graywall back to wrap up the NFL season. That is correct. It's all over, folks. The regular season is over, and the Oakland Raiders are in the playoffs, but the 49ers aren't. But don't be worried, 49er fans. You got rid of your coach, got rid of your GM. There's always next season to look forward to, and on average, 5 playoff teams per year missed the playoffs that were in it the previous season. This year, there were 6 teams that didn't even make the playoffs that were in the playoffs last year, so things can change on a flip of the dime. Look at the Raider Nation and everything we're going through. Don't worry, we're going to break down all of the action from week 17 of the NFL, as well as look ahead at the playoff picture. We got the Raiders going into Texan. They'll be in Houston. We don't know if it'll be for the Super Bowl, but we got one playoff game, and that's all that matters. So let's go ahead and look at what happened at week 17. Here it is, the ramifications of week 17 in 60 seconds.
Some teams have something to play for in Week 17. Some are just punching one more clock before the offseason. The Buccaneers cling to the faintest of playoff hopes, needing to win and have 6 other games break their way. Washington has it easier. If they win, all they need is for Packers-Lions to not end in a tie. Texans-Titans means nothing but another chance for Tom Savage to tune up for a playoff run. Cowboys-Eagles means nothing, but everyone wants to see whether Dak and Zeke will get some rest. Browns-Steelers means nothing to the Steelers, but the Browns have their eye on a winning streak. And Patriots-Dolphins doesn't mean too much, but New England can lock up the number one seed with a win. In Atlanta, the Falcons hope to lock up a first-round playoff bye. In Denver, the Matt McGloin Raiders are hoping to hold on to one, while in San Diego, the Chiefs are trying to steal it away. The Seahawks are a terrible road team, but does that really mean they can lose in San Francisco? And it all builds up to an NFC North title game, a big-time showdown in the Motor City to finish off the 2016 regular season on the first night of 2017.
The 2016 season is officially over, and as I mentioned, 6 teams from last year's playoffs did not make it. That's including the Super Bowl contenders, Denver Broncos, Carolina Panthers, and also the Cincinnati Bengals, the Washington Redskins, the Arizona Cardinals, and the Minnesota Vikings. So let's see who are those 6 new teams that we are going to see in the playoffs this year. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers were trying to hold on. They needed a bunch of situations to play out to get into the playoffs. They won 17-16 this weekend over the Carolina Panthers, but it was not enough as they did not get the help that they needed from the rest of the league, so they will be missing the playoffs this year. But Jameis Winston is the first quarterback to start his career with back-to-back 4,000-yard seasons. A lot of young talent on that team with Mike Evans. We got to figure out what they're doing with Doug Martin now, because he's going back to rehab for his PED weed issues. We don't know what it is, but Doug Martin got scratched in his last game. That doesn't help their playoff run. They fall up short and end the year at 9-7, while Carolina, disappointment after their MVP season to Cam Newton and after a Super Bowl run. Cam has one of his worst career seasons as a pro. He had his lowest career passing rating and lowest career 52.9 completion rate. It was not good with the Carolina Panthers. They end up with a top 10 draft pick, and we'll see what they can do to improve that franchise.
So many things to talk about, because I felt so bad for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because they played pretty well towards the end of the season to make that run, but they had too many scenarios that needed to go right for them to even get in with their win. This game ended up being about nothing. I think it more showed how bad Cam Newton's season has been. This might have been the worst game I've ever seen him play. 1 TD, 3 interceptions, only 200 yards through the air, barely hitting 50% on the completion passage. And without his running game, this team has really no offense, because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers played good defense, held them to only 16 points, but their offense, only 17. That also showed why they could not get in the playoffs. They couldn't do it consistently enough all year. But this is a team to watch out. As you said, Jameis Winston, back-to-back 4,000-yard years. Mike Evans is going to be there next year, and hopefully they can get a healthy and clean Doug Martin, because if he's there for the entire season, they have the offensive weapons to make a real run. Just this year, they fell up short.
Yeah, they definitely fell up short, and they had some great games, some great comebacks, and even some upsets this year. It was some great things to look forward to for that Tampa Bay Buccaneers. For the Panthers, like you said, they need to improve that run game. Maybe they can hit on that with a top 10 draft pick. Who knows what's the future? I guess the bright side is, as bad as Cam Newton played that game, the coach was trying to take him out, and he said he wanted to stay in. So Cam's still showing a little bit of heart, but the Carolina Panthers and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers seasons are both over. And let's look at the winner of that NFC South. I'm talking about Matty Ice and the ATL Falcons. They won this weekend over the Saints 38-32 to clinch that number two seed in the playoffs. And Matt Ryan, man, oh man, has he had a year. You want to talk about MVP candidates? He ends the year with a 117.2 passer rating. That's the highest passer rating in the NFL since Tom Brady's magical 2007 MVP season. I've mentioned on previous podcasts, he broke the NFL record throwing touchdown passes to at least 13 different wide receivers. He is setting all types of records, and he got his boy Julio Jones back this game. He caught 7 passes for 96 yards and a touchdown. This Falcons offense tied the 2000 greatest show on turf in total points in a season. They put up 540 points this year. Matt Ryan's got this offense flying on all assets, and it's at the perfect time with the playoffs right around the corner.
In a game where the Saints did not back away, they were playing for nothing, but they still pulled out a lot of heart. Drew Brees, not his best game, but they were in it. They ended up scoring 32 points, and they had 2 TDs on the ground. But as you said, this high-powered offense of the Falcons has not let up all season. Yes, there's been some missteps and injuries and not having Julio. The offense wasn't working. The running game wasn't there. But Tevin Coleman has emerged as a dual facet running back for this team. He's catching balls for touchdowns. This is 2 weeks straight. Even in the beginning of the season, he was rocking. He could end up being their X factor. If the wide receivers aren't playing, Devontae Freeman cannot get his usual gains that he's been getting, Tevin Coleman comes out of nowhere. He makes people miss. This guy is elusive, and he can catch, and he can run hard with the ball, and I think that he's going to be the X factor going in for the Falcons with that two seed and how they end up doing in the playoffs, because if everything plays out the way it is by seed, they're going to have to face the Cowboys, and you know you need a running game if you're playing them.
Oh, man, what a matchup that would be. And certainly with Freeman and Coleman switching in back and forth, that's a Falcons combo. That's what they want to try to use. Let's finish off the NFC South and just give a shout-out to the man, Drew Brees. Once again, leads the league in yards. Did not make the Pro Bowl somehow, but just put this into perspective. This was Drew Brees' 5th 5,000-yard season. Across the NFL, there's only been 4 other 5,000-yard system. So Drew Brees has more combined than every other quarterback for throwing under 5,000 yards. The old man got to show some respect. He's getting up there in age. Says he doesn't know how long he's going to be around, but Drew Brees, got to tip your cap to him because he has done great things for that Saints franchise ever since getting disowned by the San Diego Super Chokers. But that's a whole nother story. But let's go ahead. If we're going to talk about old quarterbacks, one showed up this weekend in Dallas, and his name was Tony Romo. That's right. Tony Romo came into the game, one drive, one touchdown. Hey, we got 3 quarterbacks playing in AFC who have never played a playoff game. Hey, can you get late year trade for Tony Romo? Because he looked good. Dak Prescott still started this game, but Tony Romo was the big headline because he looked great on that one drive. And then after that one drive, Mark Sanchez came in and things fell apart. So the Eagles ended up winning the game 27-13. Carson Wentz gets the end of the year on a high note, 245 yards and 2 touchdowns. But it is still the rookies. Zeke ends the year with the rushing title with 1,631 yards and 15 touchdowns, but did not catch Eric Dickerson for the rushing record title. He probably could have if he played the rest of the season. But hey, the Cowboys playing smart, give him some health and let Darren McFadden take over some carries. At the end of the day, this game didn't mean too much to the Cowboys. They took a loss, but they'll be resting next week in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, for both teams, I think it was more of a morale finish for the Eagles compared to what Dallas ended up doing, because Dallas had their second O-line playing, and you can't expect much, especially what you've seen all season. No Zeke, no Dak, you don't have your 2 playmakers, but I'm going to give it to Tony Romo. He did play well for that one drive. He got that TD, the only TD for the Dallas Cowboys the entire game, which I know a lot of people in Dallas probably love to see, but it doesn't make it the job any easier for Jerry Jones to tell everybody to shut up because Dak is going to play. And Mark Sanchez, you just need to stop. He just needs to stop playing in the NFL. I don't know why people just keep giving him chances. He comes in and shits the bed. He just threw 2 picks on 17 attempts. He didn't even play a full game, and he threw so many picks and just put the team in such terrible position. And this was an Eagles team that had nothing going for them on the ground either. They rushed for 30 times and were barely even getting 2 yards a run. This Dallas Cowboys defense was not there. This was a game for the Eagles to win. Okay, just be happy about how your season started and try to fix where it went wrong. But obviously, the one thing for the Eagles is Carson Wentz is going to be your guy next year. And at least they can be more happy than what the Rams are doing with the Jared Goff. They have no idea what they're doing over there. But at least the Eagles know that we have a starting quarterback and we're behind him.
Yeah, and just to touch on one thing you said about Mark Sanchez, he threw more interceptions in one half of football than the New England Patriots and Tom Brady did over the whole entire course of the year. And to think at one time, Mark Sanchez and Tom Brady was a rivalry in the AFC East. So, man, times have changed, no doubt about it. Yes, times have changed in the East. Let's go ahead and look at the NFC East, because the Redskins and the Giants were the two teams in this division actually playing for something this weekend. And it was the New York Giants pulling off a W and keeping the Washington Redskins out of the playoffs 19-10. Man, only 10 points from Kirk Cousins in his final edition to try to go make that money. We know he's going to get paid. Who knows if he's going to get franchise tagged again, or if the Redskins might actually let him walk. Who knows? But this Giants defense once again comes through. This Giants defense has allowed an NFL lowest 25 touchdowns this year. Last year, they let up 47 touchdowns, which was the most in the NFL. So, hey, they spent all that money in free agency, and boy, has it played off, because you didn't really need too much from Eli. Only 180 yards in this game. They finally got the ground game going with the rookie Paul Perkins, 21 carries for 102 yards. See if they can use that in the playoff run. But at the end of the day, the Giants got to put the final dag into Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins and eliminate them from the playoffs.
This win is, I wouldn't even give it to the New York Giants offense. This is their high paid defense. They got the job done once again. How they've done all year. They sacked Kirk Cousins four times. I don't even know how many times more he was pressured the entire game. It looked like he was not comfortable. They forced two fumbles. This is a team where they're going to start causing four turnovers. They have a chance to win any game. And this is a game where Eli Manning didn't even throw for 200, didn't even throw a TD. Odell only caught five catches. So when you see their star players on offense not even needing to provide great performances, and they still end up holding you to 10 points and still almost putting up 20 points. This is a dangerous team to watch coming into the playoffs, because this Giants team is unknown. They almost are the true wild card, in the sense that you don't know what they are going to bring, because this defense can hold you and to any team to under 15 points. And when they do that, they have enough weapons on offense to get the job done. So this is going to be very interesting, especially for the Packers when they end up facing them this week.
Yeah, you never know with playoff Eli Manning if it's going to be an interesting matchup between him and Aaron Rodgers. But let's go ahead and talk about the Packers, because the Packers and the Lions playing in an NFC North division showdown for the division. But it didn't really matter, because with the Washington Redskins losing, both teams got into the playoffs, so it was going to decide who's going to get the higher seed, who's going to get the lower seed, who gets a home game, and who has to travel on the road. Well, Aaron Rodgers gets the luxury of playing at home in Lambeau Field after he torches the Lions, throws for 300 yards and four touchdowns. He becomes the fourth quarterback with multiple 40-touchdown seasons. Aaron Rodgers this year has been getting it done with no running game at all. He has totaled 86% of the Packers' touchdowns this year. That is ridiculous. Matt Ryan, I think, is second highest at like 60, and Derek Carr is right behind him around 40. But Aaron Rodgers to be accounted for 86% of the points that you're scoring is crazy, and that's why he's one of my front runners for MVP. But a big reason why he's had this bounce back this year is a healthy Jordy Nelson. He has returned from injury last year, and he's had 97 catches, 1,257 yards, and 14 touchdowns. You want to talk about comeback player of the year? He was huge, and when Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson are connecting, they are pretty much unstoppable. They put up 31 points on his Detroit Lions defense that has been a little shaky this year. Darius Slay dealing with a few injuries. They need to get him healthy for that playoff matchup. It should be an interesting one. And then Matthew Stafford, the comeback man, he threw for 347 yards and two touchdowns and was the fastest player in NFL history to reach 30,000 yards, but came up short. When you got Aaron Rodgers throwing four touchdowns on the other side, that's a lot of points to keep up with, and he ended up losing the game 31-24.
Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind right now. I don't think he's ever had a stretch of playing this great of football, not throwing any picks and still end up getting, I think it's 18 TDs, zero interceptions he's gotten straight in these past four or five games. That's ridiculous. Nobody's going to stop you, especially when you're throwing that well. And as you said, Jordy Nelson, the entire game, they weren't even going to him. And then right when they started going to him, he caught five catches on that one drive. They ended up scoring within minutes. And that was their best, most productive drive they had all game, because the running game from Ripkowski, the wonder kid, coming out of nowhere, nine carries, 61 yards, even got a TD on through the air. This man was doing it for him, especially when they had nothing else going for them in the backfield besides Aaron Rodgers' arm. This was a great help for them, because it allowed them to open up their offense. For the Lions, just know that you tried, even though this game before the game literally meant nothing, just besides if you guys want to switch spots. No matter what, you have to play this weekend. And I think each one have their own favorable matchups in their own way, but this is definitely a better win for the Packers because they actually have a true shot to go deeper in the playoffs.
Exactly, and it gives them that home field advantage. Aaron Rodgers will try to use the running game of Ripkowski, but this was one interesting thing I saw in the game. When was the last time you saw a game end with two leading white rushers? You haven't seen that in too many years, probably since the Peyton Hillis days, but hey, props to Zenner, props to Ripkowski, prop to the Packers and the Lions. You're both in the playoffs and will both be extending your season into next weekend. Let's go ahead and look at the trash from the NFC North. That's the Bears and the Vikings. They were playing at the bottom of the bowl this weekend. 38-10, a victory for the Vikings, and they didn't even have to play Adrian Peterson, which was probably his last appearance. He probably went out and gave his little homecoming wave to the crowd because he's gone. I don't believe he's coming back, but it was all about this Vikings defense once again as Matt Barkley got turned into Jay Cutler once again. He found his shoe. The clock struck midnight, whatever that Cinderella reference is. Matt Barkley, your time is up in Chicago. Once again, a terrible game. And the only thing to look forward to is Jordan Howard. Once again, the feels man. Like we've been harping on it week after week after week on this podcast. He finishes number two in the NFL in rushing yards, right behind Ezekiel Elliott. It's the first time that two running backs have led the NFL in rushing. And if Jordan Howard maybe would have been starting the whole entire year, he could have been up there with Zeke and put up those type of numbers. So it is going to be interesting to see what he can do in the future because he just broke Matt Forte's rookie rushing record as a Bear. But hey, Alshon Jeffrey's got some hope for the Bears. He says, I guarantee to win a Super Bowl next year. I didn't even guarantee that Alshon Jeffrey's going to be on the team next year because he's a free agent, so I don't get that. But the Bears, you got yourself the number three draft pick, so hey, that's something to look forward to. The Vikings, you started off great, 5-0, ended 8-8, you're losing AP. I got no good news for you.
Yeah, they started out 5-0. They went 3-8 at the end. Ever since they lost their offensive coordinator, they have just gone to shit, have not been able to put up points, except in the recent weeks, they've been able to put up points, but they have not faced talent, real talent. Sam Bradford, now this is the question mark going into next season. Teddy Bridgewater and Sam Bradford. And Mike Zimmer's already came out to say that Sam Bradford deserves to be the starting quarterback next year. In my eyes, 8-8, when you start off 5-0, if you kept that up, maybe. But Teddy Bridgewater got you to the playoffs last year, and Blair Walsh messed up the game for you. So still, Teddy Bridgewater could have gotten you to the next round. And I think it's going to be a great QB battle to go on in offseason camp if Bradford can even stay as healthy as he did this year, because this was his miracle year. I've never seen him start and finish the season.
Yeah, Sam Bradford has definitely earned his way into at least a competition. Get this, Sam Bradford ends with a 71% completion. That's the highest in NFL history. We're talking about floppy sleeves Bradford over here. So the Vikings really do need to improve their offensive line because their running backs were getting hit before they even had the ball. Maybe they can use their draft pick to address that, but it should be interesting to see what happens next year in Minnesota. But then let's go ahead and transition from the NFC North to the AFC North. We're talking about the bad teams in the North. We got to talk about the doo-doo Browns as the Cleveland Browns trying to extend that win streak to two games. Ooh, watch out for them hot Cleveland Browns coming in. But Robert Griffin III throws for 232 yards, two touchdowns, and an interception, but loses to Landry Jones, a.k.a. Shane Flacco, on the replacements. They ended up getting a win in overtime. D'Angelo Williams, OG, led the backfield with 23 carries, 67 yards, and a touchdown. And they were just throwing the ball to whoever they found off the street, whoever was signing up with to stick them, and they got the job done. On the other side, Terrell Pryor, I got to give my respect to him, the ex-Raider. First season as a wide receiver, and he surpasses the 1,000-yard mark, so hats off to him. But besides this, this wasn't a game. This wasn't nothing interesting about. It was the replacements beating the worst team in the NFL. Congratulations, Cleveland Browns. You got the number one overall pick and the number 10 overall pick. So, hey, good signs to come for Hugh Jackson and the Browns.
How badly I wanted RG3 to just get it done. How badly I wanted them just to get it done, but they couldn't. Even against this second-tier Pittsburgh Steelers team, they had rarely any starter playing, and the Browns took it to them in overtime. I'm surprised this game even got into overtime, but RG3, I'll give it to you for this, for staying in the entire game and not playing complete shit. 29 for 40 through the air, not bad at all. It's almost 66% on the completion percentage. But then you throw two TDs and only one interception. That's okay, RG3, but your pick wasn't that great, and you're lucky that you had Isaiah Crowell busting out for these random games. I thought Jay Ajayi, when he was going off, was random when he's getting those 200-yard games, but Isaiah Crowell has over 125 yards on three different occasions, but they've been scattered out within 8 weeks apart from each other, and they're stupid. I think they really need help on the running game, because when you're trying your hardest and you're losing to the backups of a team in your division, that's when you know that the entire offense needs some help, and that's probably where they're going to need to look at for this draft.
Yeah, they definitely got a lot of things to figure out. While the Steelers are figuring out their game plan for next week, resting all of their starters, this game didn't matter anything to them as they clinched up the AFC North last week with a win over the Baltimore Ravens. Let's look at the Ravens as they were trying to play for some pride, but they ended up losing to the Bengals 27-10 to fall to 8-8 on the years. And the Bengals got the job done with no Jeremy Hill, no Giovanni Bernard, no A.J. Green, no Tyler Eifert. It was Burkhead and Core leading the stat sheet, and they got it done somehow, some way. I thought Steve Smith was going to have the Ravens inspired in his last game ever, but I guess they were really just too heartbroken from the week before and getting knocked out of the playoffs. They didn't show up to play and ended up getting their asses kicked 27-10.
Truly, I think that's what it was, because this Bengals team had no right to win this game, just like how they've been playing for the last few weeks. It's been ever since A.J. Green went down, their offense has just become very stagnant, and then Giovanni Bernard went down, and then they had a little bright spot. They had Tyler Eifert get back in the game. He was balling out, and then once he goes down, who do they have? Jeremy Hill cannot run that offense with Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton, I'm sorry, you're good, but you're not great. You can't get it done without having any real options. For me, it was the Ravens not having the morale and the will to play. I think once they got beat by Pittsburgh the week before, they knew, like, the entire season's over. Let's why put our body in this? And it would have been great to see more out of Steve Smith. And you got a shout out to that man for giving it what he's given his entire career. Even at this old age, this man still balls and burns these corners and still making them look stupid. So that man, you have to give him out. So that fool will be a Hall of Famer when it's all said and done. So you have to take your hat off and show that little man respect, because he is tiny for his position. And that fool has always balled out, and he's always played with such intensity. Always been one of my favorite wideouts.
Yeah, Steve Smith, future Hall of Famer. No doubt about it. I believe he's one of the reception leaders for under 6 foot wide receiver. He has put up some crazy stats, but you said it perfectly. The Ravens just did not show up to play after being eliminated from the playoffs. And a team that was in the same situation as them was the Buffalo Bills. They were eliminated from playoffs, had their head coach fired, and then they had to go to New York to take on the Jets, and somehow they lose 30-10. Ryan Fitzpatrick gets to put a feather in his hat to tip off his career. I know the GM doesn't want him. No one wants him there anymore, but he took your 12 mil, 14 mil, whatever it is, and he's running straight to the bank, and he got to end the year with a victory because he ended with 210 yards, two touchdowns. And I got to give shout out to Darrell Revis, the old man who has just been getting picked on all year long. He's like, man, I'm old. This isn't fun anymore. He gets his first interception of the season. It's about damn time, 17 weeks in, and he's finally talking to head coach Todd Bowles about potentially moving to safety. Maybe that could prolong his career. The Bills, they didn't play Tyrod Taylor because they didn't want him to get hurt and have to pay him even more money. LeSean McCoy ended up getting hurt, came back in the game, but they're just getting guys hurt for no reason because their season was over. They took over with Cardale Jones, but he didn't look too good, only 96 yards and an interception. I don't know what's going on with the Bills' future. The GM didn't even know they fired Rex Ryan. They got to figure out some things up in Buffalo before they can circle the wagons.
Yeah, that's very bad. That's all like on the owner. The GM said he wasn't privied to the conversation. How does your GM not privileged to the conversation about the decision on if your head coach is still your head coach? That just shows there's a problem with that head organization. They need to figure that out before all those negatives start trickling down onto their team. I know Rex wasn't the coach. I know a lot of players didn't like Rex as the coach. They said that he was a little intimidated by players. He wouldn't be able to be the true leader they needed. But at the end of the day, your owner is firing your head coach without talking to any of the top personnel that he has hired to do this job. And he's making these decisions, and you have to pay the ramifications of them, and then come out there and not play your starting quarterback, and then you end up having Ryan Fitzpatrick looking like the Ryan Fitzpatrick they paid the money to, even though this is one game the entire year. He shit the bed the entire season. And the Jets were just lucky that Bilal Powell somehow ended up running for 122. He has not played well all season. I know he's gotten more time and carries, and this was a game that literally had no real significance, no real talent even on the floor besides LeSean McCoy. And then right when he went down, I was like, why even come back? Sit out. I was like, save yourself for next season. You guys were almost 500. Don't act like your season was the Niners season and just start just playing your players even when they need rest. LeSean McCoy, you've ran crazy all season. They shouldn't have played the last week. Get some rest because you've been injury prone all your career. Make sure you're looking towards next season because both these teams are shit in the bed and they have real no bright future to look at because their top organizations and their owners are not handling it correctly.
No, they can't handle anything correctly. And once LeSean McCoy left the game, I thought I was watching the Bahama Bowl or one of these crazy bowl games that no one even watches anymore. But, you know, there's one guy sitting back and just laughing at both these organizations, and that's Bill Belichick. Yes, the head capitan for the New England Patriots. Surprise, surprise, we've already broke the news. They won the division once again, and they kept the crown this weekend as as they beat the Dolphins 35-14. Tom Brady, once again, 276 yards and 3 touchdowns. He sets an NFL record for most touchdowns to interception completion rate through 28 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. The Patriots didn't even throw an interception when he wasn't playing, so that means they ended the whole entire year only throwing 2 interceptions. Mark Sanchez, you scrub.
But Matt Barkley, scrub.
Scrubs, but, I mean, the Patriots, no Gronk, no real weapons. Edelman had his best game in a minute, 8 catches, 151 yards, and it's been the Blunt man, LeGarrette Blunt, 14 carries, 51 yards, and a touchdown. His 18th touchdown of the year. He leads the NFL in touchdowns. Let him line it up from the one, and he's going to get in. On the other side of the ball, New England, what do? They take away your best player. Jay Ajayi had 16 carries for 59 yards. Matt Moore tried to make it interesting late by getting Jarvis Landry involved, but it was not good enough as Tom Brady continues his MVP caliber season and gets the W 35-14.
Throughout the entire season, even when Ryan Tannehill was the quarterback, the only help he really had was Jay Ajayi. Jarvis Landry has definitely taken a step back from what his production was last year. And this is why Bill Belichick and the Patriots are so smart, because they take out, as you said, Marcus, they take your best player out of the game. Once they took Jay Ajayi out, then they forced Matt Moore to air the ball. And Matt Moore, I'm sorry, you're just not going to get it done against Tom Brady and the Patriots. And for Tom Brady, the question's going to come up. He has the MVP numbers, but will those first 4 games that he didn't play hurt him? Because in my eyes, it does, because that's 4 more weeks of you needing to be consistent. That's another fourth year season. I know that you're Tom Brady, you are King Tom, and you handled what you've been doing amazingly, especially with the talent that you've been given. Your team is depleted. You don't have Gronk all season, maybe 1 or 2 games. Besides that, you're playing with these other guys and you're making them into superstars. It almost reminds me of back in the day of how Peyton Manning got, when he was on the Colts in his prime, he got every receiver involved, no matter what type of talent level there was. And that's what he's doing. He's finding everybody. And they had 5 different rushers, including Tom. And that's what's going to open up their game. Bill Belichick's going to realize, okay, I'm going to use Deion Lewis. I'm going to use James White. And that's what's going to help, because LeGarrette Blunt, he's going to get you those 1-2 yard touchdown runs. But Deion Lewis and them are going to help out and catch the ball and open up the game for Tom Brady into a whole new level, where losing Gronk is not going to be as bad as what people think.
Yeah, and it's been the Patriots' model their whole entire career. It seems like Bill Belichick is just do your job. We've seen Bill Belichick kick people out of practice, suspend them from games just for showing up late and doing whatever. He doesn't care. He's going to treat you the same. Even Tom Brady's got to be held accountable to some level. And, hey, it looks like that formula is working, because they're not turning the ball over. They got one of the best scoring defenses in the NFL, and they're making plays left and right, getting turnovers, and it gave them the number one overall seed heading into the playoffs. So we'll see. I'm not too impressed with the schedule and level of competition that they played this year, but we'll get more into that next week when we preview the Patriots' first playoff game. But let's go ahead and look at who might be playing them. The winners of the AFC South is the Houston Texans, even though they lost 24-17. The Titans pull off a big win with Matt Castle at quarterback. What? Matt Castle, that's right. A week after Marcus Mariota goes down with a broken fibula, Matt Castle comes in, throws for 150 yards, a touchdown, an interception. Nothing too spectacular, but they got the job done, and the Texans were just switching back and forth. Tom Savage, Brock Osweiler. Tom Savage, Brock Osweiler. Did Savage have a concussion? Is Brock Osweiler worth the $14 million that you paid him? Both answers are no, but we still don't know who the quarterback is going to be. Brock Osweiler stayed in the game, threw for 253 yards and a touchdown, and he did get DeAndre Hopkins, or somebody got DeAndre Hopkins involved a little bit. 7 catches, 123 yards. The Texans will limp into the playoffs with a loss. They ended the same year at 9-7. The Titans are 9-7. Unfortunately for them, they got the division record, and the Texans are your champions of the AFC South.
And I hate that, because especially late in the season, I wanted Mariota to be healthy, because this would have been the game to decide the division, and I really wanted that. And it sucks to know that the Titans still ended up getting the W, and they don't get to make it. Titans, you are the team to watch out for next season. I'm going to tip out my hat to you guys, because you guys made me believers, and I was not a believer at the beginning. Mariota, Marcus, you made me a believer of yourself. With that running game, you guys made DeMarco Murray the focal point, and it led you guys to win these games. And Delanie Walker had an amazing season. And for the Houston Texans, this entire season, that's all I've been saying. Where's DeAndre? Where's DeAndre? Where's DeAndre? And he ends up putting up .123, and you still only get 17 points. I just don't understand it. You need to get Will Fuller back involved. That's what you guys were doing at the beginning of the season. He was scoring, and you haven't gone back to him all season. For me, and now, well, we know that Brock Osweiler has been named the starting quarterback upcoming for this matchup. But we'll get into that in a little bit. But for me, When you have this much quarterback dilemma, it's going to be very hard for you to do anything when you get into the next round.
Yeah, it's got to be hard to stay consistent with that level of quarterback play, but we've talked about it since our NFL season preview. The AFC South was just going to be a toss-up, and we said, what if you traded Andrew Luck and switched him with the Texans' defense and all those pieces? They'd be for sure probably one of the top two seeds in that AFC.
Definitely.
But let's go ahead and look at Andrew Luck. He ends the year with a victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars, 24-20, and what was a pretty competitive game. Blake Bortles threw for 301 yards and a touchdown. Did not throw an interception or a pick six. He did reveal that he has been playing with a few injuries this year, so that does kind of lighten the load on Blake Bortles, but he still has got to improve. Marcus Lee was the leading receiver, 6 catches, 86 yards. Allen Robinson had a few big catches here and there. There was a big stretch in the middle of the season where he wasn't getting involved at all. Had a great week last week, so they got to turn that around for the future. But Bortles, Lee, Allen Robinson, that offense got outworked by Andrew Luck, throwing for 321 yards and 2 touchdowns. And T.Y. Hilton, 6 catches, 95 yards. And what has to be the most quietest NFL receiving title with 1,448 yards. He leads the NFL in NFL receiving yards somehow. It's only because Julio got hurt, but still, got to pay respect to T.Y. for putting up those numbers so quietly. And then the OG, Frank Gore, that all the Niner fans miss so much. He becomes the fourth player in NFL history to have 9 seasons with 1,000 yards rushing. Respect to the OG as the Colts win their final game of the year, 24-20.
That is what it's all about. I love it. Marcus is a Raider fan, giving out shout-outs and respect. Frank Gore. Loved watching him all my life as a Niner. And, yes, I'm glad that he can still succeed outside of our organization and keep his career going. But for me, you fire your head coach, as the Jacksonville Jaguars fired their head coach, and it was almost on Bortles. And Bortles comes out and says that he's been playing injured. In my eyes, was that the best option for your team? I understand your competitiveness level and everything. Like, you want to play. I love that. But was playing injured the best for your team? Because you're throwing interceptions and making your team lose games. You only won 3 games all season. How long were you injured for? Your team has been in close games. Could another quarterback have helped them a little bit better? For me, that's tough to say all the true answers. But to me, they have no real backup. So maybe Bortles injured might be the best option. But they need a running game. They need to draft a running back this year. And they have the number 4 pick. And I think that Leonard Fournette from LSU might fall into their lap. And that could be the key. Because if you get Leonard Fournette, Allen Robinson, and Blake Bortles, you have the weapons to do something. But just by Blake Bortles and Allen Robinson, you have the options to get yards. And that's the problem. Like last week, they went to it. They got the win because they went at Allen Robinson. And what'd he do? He balled out. And without him, they have no other options on the wide receivers.
Yeah, you got to feed your offensive weapons, Allen Robinson. It was Corey Grant this week running for 122 yards. But, hey, the Jaguars with that number 4 overall pick, we'll see what we can do. Let's stop talking about these two teams because there's no more. Let's go ahead and get to the Bay Area because this is the Bay's golden days. So let's go ahead and kick off that NFC West. The first game we're going to look at in the division is the Cardinals and the Rams. The Cardinals put an absolutely ass whooping on the Rams, 44-6. Man, oh man, how many times are we going to see the Rams score less than 10 points this season? Here's a stat for you. That great Rose Bowl game that just happened last weekend, USC, Penn State, there's more points scored in that game than the Los Angeles Rams have scored at home the whole entire season. Yes, let that sink in. Jared Goff throwing for 120 yards, nothing else. Todd Gurley, 14 carries, 40 yards, nothing else. Todd Gurley was the leading receiver. 4 catches, 37 yards. Where's Tavon Austin? Where's his offense? Where's the head coach? Somebody who's going to come in and fix this? Man, I have no idea. The Arizona Cardinals were eliminated from playoffs a couple weeks ago, but they're still playing for pride. Carson Palmer, 255 yards, 3 touchdowns, and an interception. But the man, David Johnson, the MVP of the Cardinals by far this year, he left the game with an injury in a game that didn't even mean nothing. Why do you put your superstar player in that position? But he is the only player this year with 2,000 yards from scrimmage, so we got to show respect. David Johnson, one hell of a year. And Larry Fitzgerald, the OG, 107 catches this year. He leads the NFL in receptions, but Carson Palmer still not getting it done. It'll be interesting to see what the Cardinals do in the future.
I don't even know what to say about this because the Cardinals make me so mad because they end up playing these games against these shitty teams when I know that they're capable of playing this type of level against the good teams. As I still will reiterate, before the season, I had the Cardinals winning the division. I thought they had the best team overall. They vamped up that defense, brought in Chandler Jones. I thought it was going to be great for them. Just did not work out. And for me, Jared Goff got sacked 7 times for 72 yards. That cannot happen for you to win a game, especially with a rookie quarterback who's only played six games. Maybe. I don't even know if he's gotten that six-point mark. For me, this Rams team was doomed at the beginning of the season when they started Chase Keenum and did not start their number one pick because all you did was waste a year for Jared Goff. He did not learn anything until the games became useless. They're not important. How are you going to give this man motivation to even step in the pocket and perform when, one, you don't give him any real offensive weapons? Todd Gurley is your leading receiver and rusher, and he's shit in the bed in both aspects. That's not going to get the job done. Le'Veon Bell, by himself, produced more than probably Todd Gurley in the little games that he did throughout his entire season. That just shows you, you need weapons, and your best weapon, not doing anything. A lot of people probably ripping up those jerseys. Todd, you were looked at as the number one fantasy option going into multiple leagues, depending on how your settings are set up. You'd shit the bed, my friend. You shit the bed.
Yeah, there are a lot of pissed off fantasy owners out there for the season that Todd Gurley put up. But, I mean, hey, what did you expect from the Rams this year? They have been absolutely doo-doo. They got swept by the 49ers, and that's a big part of the reason why they are looking for a new coach after firing Mr. 500 Jeff Fisher. But they're not the only team in the NFC West that's going to be looking for a new coach because it is official. Chip Kelly, you fired. Trent Baalke, you fired. And, hey, the Niner fans got their own intake on it. This weekend, there was once again another banner flying over Levi Stadium. And this one said, the house that Harbaugh built. And, hey, they're absolutely right because since Harbaugh left, you're now 7-25. And the only team you've beat in the last year is the Los Angeles Rams. 2-14 against the Rams. You've lost to every other team in the NFL. I don't even know where to start with this one. But I'm going to go ahead and just give it straight to Harnie. What'd you see from the Niners, the GM, the coach, and the owner? What's going to happen in the future?
Pitiful. Jed York, you are pitiful. And that's why I have to play the clip of him getting absolutely harassed in the greatest way possible because I would have done the same damn thing by the reporter. And I just got to play this clip and listen to how scared Jed sounds.
Jed, you dismissed your general manager and coach because they didn't reach certain performance standards.
That's part of it.
Okay. Let's stick to that part. Why shouldn't you be dismissed or reassigned for the same reasons?
Look, again, like nothing I'm going to say is going to be satisfactory.
Say something.
Well, nothing I'm going to say is going to be satisfactory. And again, we're going to be judged on what we do and what we accomplish. We haven't accomplished enough. I own this football team. You don't dismiss owners. I'm sorry that that's the facts and that's the case. But that's the fact.
Oh, yeah. It looked like you're stumbling out there, Jed. And yes, because maybe we should get rid of you or give somebody else the team because you have not helped us whatsoever. You need to realize that you need to stop being a little boy and needing all the power in your hands to make every decision. Where you need to run this organization like a Lakers Jim Buss Sr.-esque. You need to hire the correct individuals to do the job because, yes, you have the money and the resources, but you do not have the knowledge and the leeway and the power just in yourself and the respect of the players to do what you're trying to do for this organization. And I love this organization. This is my goddamn team, and you are running it to the ground. Chip Kelly, do not understand that firing whatsoever unless you're trying to bring in a GM. He doesn't have to have a ball and chain to Chip Kelly. But still, 1 year as a head coach, you cannot do anything with that, especially with a team that has no offensive weapons. All we did from last year, besides lose more people, is lose our best wide receiver, and that was Anquan Boldin. And then you expect this team to do something with Blaine Gabbert as quarterback starting and then switching off every other week? The season was doomed from the beginning. That's why I called them to be as crap as we were. They even went over my expectations. They were shittier than I thought they would actually be. The only thing that they maybe progressed towards the season was Colin Kaepernick's play at quarterback, not throwing interceptions, keeping them in the game, and actually playing competitive games. But at the end of the day, that win the other week is going to hurt us against the Rams because we could end up having that number one pick and the choice of the pick'em. And in a year where the draft is not that deep, that number one pick could have been valuable to get Myles Garrett out of Texas A&M.
Yes, it could have been very valuable, but just like everything's been going wrong for the Niners this season. Once they had something going right, they fucked it up once again. And I'm right there with you. I'm scratching my head. Trent Baalke, okay, I understand that firing. But Chip Kelly, to fire him after 1 year? Now this is going to make 4 years. Not one, not two, not three. 4 years in a row, you're going to be looking for a new head coach. And what did they expect Chip Kelly to do? I mean, we broke it down on our NFL season preview podcast. I think you maybe give him two or three games. I maxed him out at three games to win. I mean, we didn't give this team a chance. You're going to give Chip Kelly 1 year with an injured Colin Kaepernick. He had to start the year with Blaine Gabbert. And then you get an injured, skinny, vegan Colin Kaepernick to come in. He's got the whole protest going on. I thought Chip Kelly handled that pretty well for him being accused.
He definitely did.
For being a racist coach out in Philadelphia.
Especially with that big distraction.
That's a huge distraction. And then you got no talent on the field. You lost about all the talent they've lost since Jim Harbaugh lost. And then you talk about the injuries mounting up. You lose Navarro Bowman. You start losing some of your best defensive players. And what is Chip Kelly supposed to do? I don't understand this. He's going to go on and be a great offensive coach somewhere. I mean, even Jed York said, oh, I'm sure he'll be a great coach somewhere else. But why not there? Why not in Santa Clara? Why not in San Francisco? It's because Jed York, you can't figure it out. And you said, oh, well, you don't dismiss an owner. Well, here's a newsflash for you. Your daddy owns the team. You don't own the team. Yeah, he gave it to you, but he could easily take it back and give it to one of your other brothers. I mean,
Sister.
Yeah, or his sister would probably do a better job.
That's who I wanted to be owner. I think she has a greater mindset, and I think she understands to run the organization, like hire the right people. That's what we've said. The Raiders have turned around their organization because they hired McKenzie. That's going to be the biggest step, is hiring a smart GM to put your team in the correct place and hire the correct individuals to make this team go in the positive direction.
Yeah, no doubt about it, because we also know what happened to the Raiders in the past 14 years. We're going to talk about how this is our first playoff game in 14 years. In those last 14 years, it was Al Davis's dying days. He was literally throwing out contracts left and right, just trying to buy contracts, move up in the trade around draft picks for old veterans, do whatever he can to win. And what did we see Mark Davis do when he took over once Al Davis, rest in peace, my man, fell down? He said, hey, I'm not a great football mind. I can admit that. I'll hire Reggie McKenzie. I'll hire a guy who came from this great Green Bay Packers organization and can lead this franchise to the promising future.
And look at him now. Yeah, exactly. 13-3. Like,
yeah, it's worked out, and now we're in the playoffs. But now Trent Baalke is gone. Chip Kelly is gone. Colin Kaepernick, we don't know if he's going to be a free agent, if he's going to come back. I don't even think too many teams want to touch him because of all the controversy that he went through. So there are a lot of questions going forward for the 49ers in the future. But, hey, at least you got the number 2 draft pick. But I don't even know if you can solve all those problems. You're better off trading down and trying to stack up on talent.
This is not that deep of a draft. That's why they have to start looking at that. But at the first thing, I really hate all the talks already about Jed York asking permission and like going already to hire a head coach before he's even looking at a damn GM. You need to let your GM hire the best man for the job and let him create the team, because he is the one that's going to have the second say besides the owner. And Jed, you need to sit down and just hire the right individuals, or I promise you, you will end up getting so much scrutiny that you're going to want to sell your team.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all. You can't look for a coach without looking for a GM, because as you mentioned perfectly, that's the only logical reason for getting rid of Chip Kelly, so you're not in a ball and chain situation. You want a GM to come in and bring in his own coach. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't even know what to tell you, Niner fans. It's going to be a rough ride trying to climb back to the top. Hey, maybe Jim Harbaugh comes back out of college. Who knows? But Harney,
I will be here for the ride.
Yeah, to wrap it up, my man, 2016 49ers season, anything you want to say to wrap it up?
The worst season I've ever seen, but there's only one way to go, and that is up. I really don't believe I'll ever see this team lose more games than they did this season, or just in these past two seasons. They've been terrible. But no matter what, I'm still going to be here. I'm still going to be rocking the same colors, red and gold, to the rest of my life. This is just going to be a process. It's going to be like Joel Embiid. It's going to be the process.
Hey, trust the process. We don't know if we can trust Jed York, but hopefully he makes some good hires that we can trust in, just like Mark Davis did with Reggie McKenzie, because in Reggie, we trust. And that wraps up the 49ers. But if I'm talking about in Reggie, we trust, you know I got to talk about the Raiders. So let's go ahead and look at the AFC West. Unfortunately, the Raiders will not be taking home the AFC West title this year, because Week 17 division games just had to come down to it. We ended up losing the Broncos. The Chiefs ended up beating the Chargers, and the Chiefs win the number 2 seed. Let's look how they did it before we get to the Raiders. They won against the Chargers 37-27 in a game where San Diego almost had a chance. They kept it interesting, and I thought, hey, maybe the Chokers will pull one off and not choke and give the Raiders number 1 seed. But, you know, surprise, surprise, it's in their name, the San Diego Chokers. In their last game in San Diego, it was truly a tragic moment as the team was walking off in a loss and they were playing Stand By Me over the loudspeakers. They ended up firing Mike McCoy. They're going to fire everybody as they try to do a whole rebrand as they move to L.A. Phillip Rivers, he'll be dragging along his 13 kids with him up Highway 5 to L.A. There's nothing good to look forward to for Chargers fans, because your team is leaving you. I know L.A. is not too far, but, hey, it's a sad story. The Chiefs, on the other hand, they're celebrating with all the barbecue they can eat out there in the Midwest. They end the year with 12-4, and they are the only team to go 6-0 in their division this year. And just like that, Kansas City Chiefs get a bye week and they're the number two seed in the AFC playoffs.
Changed just like that. It's within the last 2 weeks. That's why the NFL is crazy. It's why sports are amazing and the competitive net level needs to be consistent. And for the Chargers, I felt bad because I don't think they need to fire their head coach just because they were the best 5-11 team out there. They were in games every week. But as you said, they're the super chokers. They ended up losing all these games. But they had so many guys injured. Their top corner injured. They lost Keenan Allen, who could have probably ended the year in leading in receptions. Keenan Allen was on a tear before he went down. And Melvin Gordon was playing good. They had the offensive weapons. Just nothing could click. Everybody just kept getting injured. There was no way for them to win. And they just could not close. They cannot close these games out. And for the Chiefs, Travis Kelce is an animal. And that man is just going to keep doing it for week on week. I'm telling you, in the playoffs, this man is going to be that guy that's going to end up getting them the points because that's Alex Smith's favorite target. You know, Alex Smith, just game managing it. The little dump down, just get the first down, get 3 yard pass, just get it done. And Travis Kelce is going to be the X factor going in for the playoffs because he is going to be their guy who can end up getting 4 or 5 TDs in 2-3 games if they need him to.
Yeah, Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill has been the only offense for the Chiefs the whole entire year. Jeremy Maclin has been hit or miss dealing with injuries. And hey, the Chiefs are in the playoffs, but I'm sorry, Chargers fans. I shouldn't be so rude just because your team's moving to LA. You still have a couple things to look forward to. As you mentioned, you dealt with a lot of injuries this year. Keenan Allen's going to be back. Melvin Gordon's going to be back. And I will pay some respect to Joey Bosa. I don't want to root for anybody on the Chargers, but Joey Bosa out of Ohio State, after the whole holdout situation and him not playing the first couple weeks, this guy came in like a wrecking ball. He even sacked Carr a couple times this year against that Carr insurance offensive line. This guy was putting pressure over all the quarterbacks. So it's just another pass rusher added to that AFC West.
And that's one thing that they have a positive. They actually made a good pick in the last draft. They just couldn't get him to play for the first 4 to 6 games.
Yeah, exactly. And they'll end up with another top 10 draft pick. So Chargers fans, Los Angeles fans, I should say, you got something to look forward to. Because I'm sure they'll be better than the fucking Rams out there.
Yeah, exactly. At least you get to watch 2 games a week, potentially.
Yeah, you'll get 2 games a week, but the number one team will still be the Raiders down in LA. Because, you know, we take over all of California. I've already mentioned to you, we've got more wins combined than every other team in California added up. The Oakland Raiders are sadly not the AFC West champions as they took a loss this weekend to the Denver Broncos in Denver, 24-6. And man, as soon as we put out our last podcast, I got an update saying, this is going to be Gary Kubiak's last game. He's going to retire. And I was just like, oh shit. Now they got something to play for. This coach just won them a Super Bowl last year, so you know he's respected by the players. And in his last game, what do you know? He comes out and beats the Raiders. Of course, we went down not to our second quarterback, our third quarterback, not our second string safety, not our third string safety, our fourth string safety. The Raiders were falling apart and could have really used that bye week. But hey, now we got to turn around and play again back right in a week. And hopefully we have some more heart because it just really did look like the Broncos wanted it more out there. They were playing harder. Besides the first half, we had a few penalties that messed up a lot of drives and sustained some of their drives. It wasn't the Raiders' brand of football, and that's to be expected in the first game without our leader, without our captain, without Derek Carr. Matt McGloin came in and just did not look like the Moxie Matt that I've seen before. Where's the red rifle that we've seen in the preseason? He was not hitting his throws. I previewed it on our last podcast. I knew they were going to stack 8 or 9 in the box. But you still got to hit the throws because that means one-on-one opportunities for Crabtree and Cooper. But McGloin missed Cooper on a wide-open double move, which could have been a touchdown. And then he overthrew Crabtree multiple times, and he ends up leaving the game in the second quarter with a shoulder injury. And then what do you know? The rookie comes in, Connor Cook. Let that boy cook. He looked pretty good on his first drive. He went 7 for 8 and hits Amari Cooper on a 32-yard touchdown. Then next drive gets strip sacked. And then eventually throws an interception. This game wasn't too much to really talk about because the Raiders, they just came out flat and they came out dead. And defensively, I mentioned the penalties that really just did sustain drives, helped them out a lot. And here's Jack Del Rio talking about those two biggest plays of the game that really did do the Raiders in.
Slow start, had a series of penalties to allow them to continue the drive. You know, and we had our chances, and early in the game there were two plays that stick out for me. One was a run where we didn't align properly and we misfit it and we allowed them to go 65 yards, I think. And I think we ended up holding them to a field goal, if I'm not mistaken. But, it, you know, it was just an explosive allowed there that allowed those points. And then the other killer for me was at the end of the half when we backed them up to get them out of field goal range, and then they throw a little screen out there and pop that thing. convert a big third and 18. So to me, those were two really big momentum plays that we failed to make defensively. I thought we did some things. I thought we showed some grittiness and kind of hung in there for a while. And, you know, we get the turnover, and it's looking like we're going to be able to climb back in this thing, and we just didn't really respond with it.
13 penalties, 125 yards, looking like the old Oakland Raiders in form with all these penalties coming in, and then three turnovers. That's a season high for the Raiders. We really were just shooting ourselves in the foot. Jack Del Rio mentioned those two plays. One would even line up right, and then another one, we stopped him on third down, but Jack Del Rio accepted the penalty, backed him up at third to 18, tried to get him out of field goal position, but what do you know? They connect on a third and 18 screen pass for a touchdown, and we are looking like the Raiders' defensive backs from years past. I mean, we could not tackle. There's missed tackles left and right. Nate Allen, the backup for Carl Joseph, went down to our fourth string safety. I mean, man, where was the tackling at left and right? We couldn't get anything done as we let the Broncos run for 143 yards on us while we only ran for 57 yards and were 2 for 11 on third down conversions. So, I mean, we're looking at our worst offensively produced game and one of our worst defenses games. Things have got to get back on track as we come back and play on Saturday versus the Texans. And boy, do we got to get it figured out fast as Matt McGloin's done and Connor Cook could become the first player to ever start his first career game in a playoff game. Man, oh man, it's got to be a good week of practice because the Raiders are heading into Houston take on the Texans in the wild card round of the playoffs.
I think that was the best thing for Connor Cook is to be able to see the number one defense in the NFL, arguably, to see them at least for majority of the game to get himself ready for Houston because this defense in Houston is not going to be as talented as this Broncos defense. And as you said, Gary Kubiak's last game, this Broncos team definitely came out with a little more fire and a little more urgency, even though their season was in the books. And for me, ever since the injury happened, that's the only question mark this Raiders team has. No other question marks. Their defense, you know that they have the potential of doing it. They have Khalil Mack running it. They have the weapons on each side. But it's just all about the quarterback at this point. How well can Connor Cook do? And we've talked about it. It's all about going to be he needs to Alex Smith the game. He needs to manage it and just go slowly, take time off the clock, and just use that running game and that great offensive line to get down the field.
Yeah, we got to improve the running game. I mentioned it when we had Carr the first time that we played Denver. We straight ran down their throat over 150 yards, but we saw this weekend they were stacking a box, but the difference between Matt McGloin and Connor Cook was Matt McGloin at 6 foot was getting balls tipped down, overthrowing passes. Connor Cook came in, completed first 7 or 8, and that really did open up the rushing lanes just a little bit because they couldn't put 8 or 9 people in the box, and that's the thing. When you got Crabtree and Cooper one-on-one, they're the first Raiders wide receiver duo to put up 1,000 yards each since Tim Brown and Jerry Rice did. So you know you got weapons. Connor Cook is just going to really have to manage this game and find his weapons and give him the ball in open space. But let's not get too far of our head of ourselves and start previewing next week before we announce it's straight cash, homie. The playoff time.
Randy, tell him what time it is.
Straight cash, homie.
That's right. Straight cash, homie. The playoff edition.
This winter, the quest for the Super Bowl begins. Teammates will come together.
Friend, avenge Gronk death.
You're not dead, Gronk. But yes, I'll get us that trophy.
This year, division's only big enough for one of us. Good thing I've been watching Westworld.
We've got a 1091 for the Lions and then a disturbance call over at the Georgia Dome.
Too old for this.
Walk the plank, Hopkins. The Chiefs are on the horizon.
It's broke.
This is a literal cliffhanger.
No!
Who will it be? From the people who brought you the regular season comes Playoffs, the movie.
And with the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Cowboys, and the Falcons all on byes, there's only 4 games this weekend, so every game is the matchup of the week. And the first one, surprise, surprise, that we're going to get is the Raiders versus the Texans at 1:20, 4:20 Eastern time, and we will be taking on the wild card game. Raiders in Houston. The Super Bowl is being in Houston. Coincidence? I think not. I don't care who's playing quarterback for the Raiders. Connor Cook, I was just mentioning it. He is the first player ever to get his first career start in the playoffs. Man, this guy was great at Michigan State. Took over for Kirk Cousins. Went 34-5. Won the Rose Bowl. Won the Cotton Bowl. Was the most winningest quarterback ever at Michigan State. But he fell in the draft because people questioned his leadership ability and how he will lead a team. Well, hey, he's got a chance to prove he can lead a team. And hey, he's got a chance to prove why the Raiders traded up in front of the Cowboys and took Connor Cook ahead of Dak Prescott. The rookie's got his chance to ball out. We see Dak doing it this year. Why can't we have another rookie doing it? We'll see what he can do. Like I mentioned, we really need to improve the run game. Last time we played the Texans, we played them down in Mexico, got the suavemente going. It was a little bit of a controversial game, but this game we really need to run the ball better because we only ran the ball for 30 yards against the Texans, and that's Jadeveon Clowney. He had 5 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss. We got to contain that guy. But one thing that the running backs did do well in that game against the Texans, they had 11 catches for 199 yards, so that's going to be huge for Connor Cook to check down to Jalen Richard, to Jonjay Washington, because they have the mismatch going against a slower Brian Cushion. I love Brian Cushion, one of my favorite linebackers, but he's not what he used to be. So I do think that we do have the mismatch there. And I mentioned it, Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, the first Raiders duo to both go over 1,000 yards since Tim Brown and Jerry Rice. We need to get them the ball in space, so throw some screen passes, whatever we need to do. Them, the Mighty Mouses, we need to get this offense going on all pieces to really help Connor Cook out. And then on the defense side of the ball, Khalil Mack, Bruce Irvin. We know what the Slash Brothers have been doing all year, and they both tore up Brock Osweiler in that Texans game down in Mexico. Bruce Irvin had 10 tackles that game, a sack, and 2.5 tackles for a loss. Mack had 3 tackles and a sack. And then we see Mario Edwards Jr. I've been talking about him the past few weeks. The last time that Mario Edwards Jr. and Khalil Mack played in the same game against Brock Osweiler, Khalil Mack had 5 sacks. So we'll see if Mario Edwards Jr. can create that presence on the inside. If I'm talking about pass rushers, might as well throw this out to you that Roger Goodell denied Aldon Smith and will not let him come back this year. So once again, fuck you, Roger. But one man that is going to be back for the Raiders that Roger Goodell cannot stop from coming back is Carl Joseph. With Nate Allen going down last week, Carl Joseph's recovery process did have to be sped up. But when he played against the Texans down in Mexico, he had 10 tackles. So that is going to be huge going up against Lamar Miller, who is going to be back this weekend for the Texans. He ran for 104 yards. We got to keep him to less than that. And we got to contain the big plays. DeAndre Hopkins, we got lucky. He stepped out of bounds by about half a foot last time we played him. You mentioned it, Will Fuller. If the Texans were smart, they would get him more involved, all the speed that he has. Braxton Miller had a touchdown against us too. So we got to try to contain these big play wide receivers and get to Brock Osweiler, get after the quarterback. And hey, the Texans, they're one of the worst teams this year in scoring points differentials. The Raiders are one of the best in turnover differentials. So we'll see if the Raiders can take advantage, get some interceptions. Let me get that strip sack, Mac. And you know I'm taking the Raiders to win the first game of the playoffs, wild card weekend. The Raiders +3.5 over the Texans. Marcus Boucher, Bay's Golden Days. If you ain't rocking with the Raiders, then fuck you. Turn this podcast off because I still got faith. Don't tell me my season is over. You're not Nostradamus. You don't know the future. I'm telling you, the Raiders will win this weekend in Houston.
And the other side is me, where I'm going to tell you this, like all valid points that you just stated. And yes, this is going to be an interesting game because both teams, there's no clear-cut winner on this. Each team is having their own problems on each side. But I think where I might give the Texans a little bit of edge is Lamar Miller is coming back this week. And just because if they can do what they did at the beginning of the season and feed this man the 25 carries he deserves, he's pulling out over 100 yards when he's doing it, they need to get back to giving it to him because Brock Osweiler does not have that arm to get it done. He has more interceptions at 16 and 15 TDs all season. So this is a man that if the Raiders can start putting pressure up there, and as we talked about earlier, what did the Patriots do this week against the Dolphins? They took out Jay Ajayi. To me, Lamar Miller will be the best player for the Texans because DeAndre Hopkins can't get the ball to him. At the end of the day, he's their best offensive weapon, but if he can't get the ball to him, he can't do nothing. But Lamar Miller can create for himself. So that's going to be the biggest key for them is if they feed Lamar Miller, I think the Texans can end up winning the game. But I'm still leaning with the 3.5 for the Raiders.
You make a great point, Lamar Miller. It doesn't matter what the quarterback controversy is. I mean, because all he's got to do is turn around and hand off the ball. So I'm still hoping Lamar is still nagging a little bit with his ankle injury. Who knows? But you're right. If we can stop Lamar Miller and force Brock Osweiler to try to beat us with his arm, I like our chances. And at the end of the day, that's all it is. Chances. We've been talking about it all year long. All you need is your ticket to the dance. The Raiders have swept the AFC South in general this whole entire year. So the Texans walking in on a bum leg with their losing quarterbacks, barely squeezing in, I think the Raiders will handle them. And that is the first game of the playoffs. Let's go ahead and look at the second game of the playoffs, that Saturday night matchup. We got the Seattle Seahawks taking on the Detroit Lions in Seattle. I've mentioned it before, there's only been three teams beside the Arizona Cardinals who have won in Seattle since 2013, and the Seahawks have won 9 straight home playoff games. The Lions have lost 10 straight road playoff games. They haven't won a road playoff game since 1957. Obviously, Matthew Stafford wasn't playing on the team back in 1957. Matthew Stafford has 8 game winning drives this year. But I've mentioned it, Darius Slay on the defense side of the ball is their biggest and probably only playmaker. The first 10 games of the year were decided by 7 or less points. If Darius Slay is not there to keep the game close, I think Doug Baldwin's going to have a huge game. Russell Wilson, they're going to have to throw the ball a lot because the Seahawks have been dealing with a lot of late season injuries. We've seen Earl Thomas go down, Cam Chancellor dealing with the injury, and now Tyler Lockett done for the season. It's going to be all Russell Wilson, Doug Baldwin, and Jimmy Graham because they've had no rushing attack this year. They've had no offensive line. Their leading rusher is still Christine Michael. He got cut about halfway through the season. He's not on the team anymore, and he's still the leading rusher. I mentioned Cam Chancellor is dealing with a little bit of an ankle injury. Him and Bobby Wagner are going to have to do everything they can to slow down this Lions defense. Bobby Wagner finishes the season leading the NFL in tackles, and it's going to come down to Legion of Boom. Are they healthy enough? Can they slow down Matthew Stafford and his injured finger? We shall see. At the end of the day, the Seahawks are favored by 8 points. That is a pretty big point spread. Like I mentioned, the first 10 games of the Lions season was decided by 7 points or less. I don't like the points spread too much, but I do like the Seahawks in this game.
See, I'm going the opposite. I think the Lions are going to do very well just because ever since Earl Thomas went down, this has not been the same Seahawks team. Obviously, their whole secondary has not looked the same. He's a huge part of it, just chemistry-wise and just knowing his other teammates and knowing where they will be on the field and how he can respond and get to the right position. But for me, the Seahawks have been able to succeed very highly when Jimmy Graham is involved. They have gone away from that because people obviously realize that, okay, even without Drew Brees, Jimmy Graham could still get it done because he's an animal. He's too big of a mismatch. For them to win this game, and especially to cover the 8-point spread, the only hope they have is to get Jimmy Graham involved. Jimmy Graham is going to need to get at least 75 and a TD for the Seahawks to win this game in my eyes. I think the Lions are going to be pissed about losing that tough one in home against Green Bay, and I know they want another chance to keep playing football, and I know they're a team to grind to the last seconds. I'm going to give the Lions this, especially with the spread.
Hey, the Lions and Matthew Stafford, the late comeback kid, the team that's been in every game. They're similar to the Chargers, but they're actually winning games unlike the Chargers. So we'll see what Matthew Stafford and those late game heroics can do, but on the road, in the playoffs, in Seattle, it is going to be a tough matchup, but it should be one that comes down to the end, so a great Saturday night game. And then let's go to Sunday morning, where we got the Steelers and the Dolphins. You might remember, this is a rematch from week 6 of the NFL season. The Dolphins actually beat the Steelers 30-15. But let me put a little asterisk there. That was the game that Ben Roethlisberger got hurt in the second quarter, came back, was hobbling around, and threw 2 interceptions. So he was not all there. Le'Veon Bell, only 53 rushing yards. Antonio Brown, 4 catches, 39 yards. That obviously correlates to Big Ben's injury. But then we all remember that day for Jay Ajayi. He ran for 204 yards and 2 touchdowns. But once again, let me put an asterisk there because there was no Ryan Shazier that weekend. With Ryan Shazier in there, that defense is a completely different lineup. He's made big game-winning interceptions the past couple games. He has been huge for that defense side of the ball. And overall, I just think the Steelers are at a more healthy point now because we're going to see Ben Roethlisberger healthy resting a game against Matt Moore, not Ryan Tannehill. It doesn't look like he's going to be back in time. And overall, a healthy Steelers defense, a healthy Steelers offense. I don't think they're going to contain Le'Veon Bell to only 53 rushing yards this game, so I will be taking the Steelers. But the point spread is 10 points. How does that even make sense? The Dolphins beat the Steelers the first time they played, and now the Steelers are double-digit point favorites. I mean, that's looking like the biggest spread that the Steelers have had all year, but I'm not betting on the Dolphins. Maybe I'll take a teaser. move down the points a little bit, but I'm taking the Steelers, and fuck it, give me the 10, because I think they will win by double digits.
See, the 10 points has been so big, especially for the Steelers all season. So for me, it's almost me thinking about how bad Matt Moore is going to be or how effective Jay Ajayi will be able to be. And I think the Steelers are going to take a page out of the Belichick book, look last week and be like, damn, without Jay Ajayi, they have nothing. Matt Moore can't get it done in the air. But this Steelers team is not the same team back in the day. They have gotten it going. At the end of the year, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell have really came into their shells. And Ben Roethlisberger is loving Le'Veon in the passing game. I see Le'Veon Bell having more receiving yards than rushing yards this game. But that is my bold prediction. He's going to hit over 100, probably have 200 yards in total from the line of scrimmage by the end of the game. And they're going to win handily. 10 points is a lot. That is a handily win, but I have no trust in the Dolphins whatsoever. I have no faith in Matt Moore, so I'm going to have to go with the Steelers at 10 points.
Yeah, it's crazy when you're looking at this AFC playoff picture. I believe Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Alex Smith have combined 53 postseason wins. Connor Cook, Matt Moore, Tom Savage / Brock Osweiler have a combined 0. So there is definitely a gap between the quarterback play, but oh my God. Who knows what's going to happen in the AFC to finish off wild card weekend. We got the Giants and the Packers. You want to talk about playoff experience. These are two former Super Bowl MVPs and Eli Manning taking on Aaron Rodgers. Eli Manning has been up and down like he's been his whole career, but you never know with playoff Eli. And the Giants' odds to win the Super Bowl are 18-1. I'm sorry, Patriots fans, if that record rings a bell for you 18-1ers out there, but this should be an interesting game because the Packers actually won this matchup back in week 5. They won 23-16. The Packers defense has been on and off the whole entire year. That's been Eli on and off the whole entire year. Odell Beckham will figure out what he's going to do after partying down in Miami with his Timberland boots on a boat. They're even saying there was a blunt and pipe in that picture, so the party was really getting cracking down on South Beach. But Odell, don't leave your towns down in South Beach, because now you got to go from Florida, the warm weather, to Lambeau.
12 degrees.
I don't know how that's going to help you out at all. And you're facing Aaron Rodgers, who's been playing at an MVP level. Over the last 7 games, he's got nearly 2,000 yards, 17 touchdowns, and no interceptions. This man is playing incredible. And then the big matchup to me is actually going to be between the coaches, Ben McAdoo versus Mike McCarthy. Ben McAdoo used to be an understudy of Mike McCarthy. Now they will be facing each other in the playoffs. And Aaron Rodgers, with those wide receivers, Jordy Nelson and Davante Adams, facing off against Landon Collins, Norris Jenkins, and this defensive backfield for the Giants, it should be interesting. The Giants' defense has only allowed 284 points all year. The Broncos last year only let up 296 yards, so this Giants' defense is looking like a Super Bowl-caliber defense, and it could be spoiling some teams' playoff runs.
Exactly. The biggest key is going to be playoff Eli Manning. Which one are you going to see? Are you going to see Eli that's going to throw a TD and 3 picks, or is he going to go 4 TDs and no picks and take out Tom Brady at one point? And this is Aaron Rodgers, though. He's got to face Aaron Rodgers, a hot Aaron Rodgers, in a cold Lambeau Field. It's going to be 12 degrees. That's what's projected. That is ice cold. And for Odell, you're chilling in Miami where it's all warm and stuff. You're going to go down there. You ain't going to be able to rock those Timbs, okay, boy? You need to put on those cleats and get those hands ready because it's going to be cold. Eli's going to be throwing that ball, and the only chance you have is your defense. That defense has the opportunity and has the potential to hold Aaron Rodgers to a terrible game. But the way the man is playing, I think it is too hard to go against Aaron Rodgers in January at Lambeau. It's too difficult. I think you have to go with the Packers for the points. But this might be the most closest matchup out of all the playoff games besides the Raiders-Texans.
Yeah, this probably should be one of the most high-scoring, interesting games. The Packers are favored by 5 points, and I do think that Aaron Rodgers will win by a touchdown in this game, which wraps up everything from Wild Card Weekend in a special edition of Straight Cash, homie, the playoff edition. We both agree that the Packers and the Steelers should win their matchups, but I'm taking the Raiders, and I'm taking the Seahawks.
And I got the Texans, and I got the Lions.
So we shall see what happens this Wild Card Weekend. We'll see who goes 4-0. Maybe we're both wrong on the Packers-Steelers. It's the NFL. Nobody knows what's going to happen. But one thing you know that will happen is that the Bay's Golden Days will be back next week to wrap up all Wild Card Weekend. Shout out to all the other teams that didn't make the playoffs. Niner fans, this was your final podcast to hear on your team up until we get up to draft season. But hey, Raider fans, we're going to keep breaking down week by week, playoff by playoff. Hopefully we can get the car back in the Super Bowl. I know I got high hopes. We're down to our third-string rookie quarterback, but there is still a chance. I believe. My first playoff game in 14 years, so you know I'll be ecstatic this weekend. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Bay's Golden Days. Check out our website at bgdsports.com. Continue to download and subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. We appreciate it so much. Keep on supporting the Bay Area teams. Keep on listening. And until then, you know what it is.
And don't forget, it's the Bay's Golden Days.
Steady gold. Pony boy.